Hello, hello, you beautiful people, your beautiful faces. It's now time for your favorite part of your day. It's the Mommy Files. I'm a new black mom, and I'm back. I took a small hiatus. My daughter was sick. I was sick. Jesus was sick. Everybody was sick in my household. And if you don't know, battling baby sickness is the hardest thing ever. And that's what we came here to talk about today, was how to get through those scary moments of the baby blues. And these are different set of baby blues. These are babies getting cold, baby getting hand, foot, and mouth, baby getting all types of things. And as a new parent, I think a lot of times our first hiccup is always the hardest one to get over. I know personally, I am not a fan of my daughter, you know, with a cough or a sniffle. But I know how normal it is for kids to get sick, because if they've never dealt with a real winter, their body's adjusted to these cold and extreme climates. One of the hardest things is to not panic every other parent or person around you. My biggest headache is explaining to people, okay, she has a little bit of a sniffle, she has a little bit of a cough, she has a little bit of congestion, we're battling it. If she is not deathly ill, she will be okay. And I feel like parents, especially of new parents, it's like those first few months of your child, you know, they're so precious, they're so delicate, but they're also extreme temperatures and extreme changes for your child. One of the hardest parts is people dealing with kids being sick, and you're not the bad parent if your child is sick. Let me say that. I hate the stigma behind, oh, such and such baby is sick. Oh, it's because she don't be bundling that baby up, or she don't do X, Y, and Z. First of all, colds, viruses, all types of infections are spread by person to person, not because the weather got cold. People get a common cold because of a virus. People get sniffles and infections and all types of other issues because of coming in contact with someone who is sick. Now, a child may, you know, get frostbite from being outside in the cold, or they might get, you know, inflammation of this or that, or have a couple, you know, chills, some of the symptomatic, yes. But when people make it into the assumption that you're a bad parent because your child has a cold, everybody gets a cold, every single person. Everybody gets the sniffles, everybody has a cough at least one point during the winter. So why is it that when a baby or an infant gets it, it's like, oh my God, the end of the world? I feel so relieved that I didn't beat myself up as much as I know my friends did when it came to every little inch is not, you know, a symptom of death. You know what I'm saying? My best friend, I love her to death. But when her daughter was small, every time I turned around, she was running to the hospital. Like, legit running to the hospital. She'd be like, oh my God, she was sniffing too long last night. I'm taking her to the hospital. Oh my goodness. She had, you know, X, Y, and Z. And I don't, you know, discourage going to the hospital. Don't take it as that. I personally just feel like when it came down to it, I'm just not a freak out person. So I don't naturally jump off the deep end if my child has a sniffle. I'm like, okay, what are we doing to battle it? We're going to get you some kids Motrin. We're going to get you some kids Tylenol. We're going to get you some Vicks. Rub your feet. Rub your chest. All of the things that I would do if I was sick to battle it. Now, the difference is your kid being sick sucks, because then they're going to want to be, you know, nestled and held. They're a bit more fussy. They're a bit more, you know, just uncomfortable. The difference is you're an adult, so you can help them. When you're an adult, don't nobody care. Nobody cares that your child, nobody cares that you're sick. Your child, totally different situation. But one of the stigmas I hate is the fact that, especially when you're a new mom, I feel like the older generations or grandparents in general are so quick and problematic to say, well, it's because you ain't do. Me and my mother got into it briefly, because I am my mother's child. So anytime something turns into a her opinion versus mine when it comes to my child, as we like to refer, and she can't win. Because here's the thing. When it was your child and your choice and your decision, you did what you felt was best. It's my child, my choice, my decision. I'm going to do what's best. And especially grandparents, they are not a fan of that theory. And the reason I say they're not a fan is because they feel like they have a card that trumps parents. They don't. They do not have a card that trumps mom and dad. And for me, me and him are very adamant on our decisions when it comes to our child to be a unified front in that sense. We may not agree on everything, but the decisions that we make for our child, how our child is doing things, if he don't have an issue, I don't have an issue. Period. Now, the problem is when you have grandparents that are, you know, old-fashioned in every sense of the word, they're very easily pushed into a position where they feel as though, well, I said it, so that's what it's going to be. Oh, okay. Right, let's see how that works. Because I'm a firm believer in parents trump grandparents. And the reason I say that is because my mom was a very strategic parent in the sense that she did things her way, how she liked it with her children. Nobody could really say anything different. I do the same with my child, and I use the same card she used, and I says, but remember, Mom, she's my child, not yours. And my mother completely goes into this, like, deer in the head, like, caught off guard face of, you really went there. Absolutely. So if I choose that my child is not going to do something, whether you think, you know, you agree with it or not, that's not your decision to make. And if you feel so strongly, you just won't see your grandchild. Now, that might sound harsh, but in all actuality, I feel like grandparents have to have a limit. And aunties and uncles have to have a limit. Because when you are a young, impressionable parent, a lot of the decisions you make are based around your village. But if your village is tainted, your decisions are tainted. Perfect example. My best friend, who was pregnant, she was young. She was, what, 23, 24 when she got pregnant? And yeah, like 23, 24. And what was crazy about it was she had a really great opportunity to move into her own place right at the end, like right at the end of her pregnancy, right before she gave birth, around that same circle. And what was crazier was that, you know, she had been wanting to move. She had been pregnant, living at home with her mom. She really was like, you know, I need my own space. This would be a great opportunity, blah, 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 blah. And then her village around her was just like, no, don't move. You don't want to move. Don't move. And it ended up being really hard for her because the village that was supposed to be there to support her really wasn't there. And the whole reason she stayed was because this village made the assumption that they were going to stay there, be supportive, and all of that. When in fact it was like, you were better off moving out, having your own space, being independent with your child, even though you were a single parent, than it was for you to sit at home and have no real support there. And the little bit of support, shoot, could have happened from your apartment. I felt like she had a great opportunity to move when she had the money, when she had the chance, when she had the opportunity. And instead, her village was more hesitant in pushing her in a direction that they felt was a good decision for her. Not, what was a good decision for her if I was her? And people don't know that difference of great decision for you if I was in your shoes versus a great decision I feel I would do or want for you. Because I can say, I don't want you to, you know, I don't want you to smoke because I know you have asthma. That's me thinking of you fully. I don't want you to smoke because I don't like smokers. That's me thinking of you because of me. The difference. So her decision to tell her, you know, no, you shouldn't move, or that's not a good move to make right now, was not for my best friend. It was for herself. It was selfish because my best friend needed that growth. She needed that push. She needed that solidarity in her own space. And I'm a firm believer of solidarity in your own space. I love every inch of being independent, every inch of not being in my mom's house. I loved it. I loved the freedom I felt in making decisions that I chose that had no repercussions on anyone else. And what I mean by that is I made decisions if I wanted to drink, if I wanted to smoke, if I wanted to hang out, if I wanted to party, if I wanted to come in late. Whatever decisions I made were decisions that were best for me. when it comes to having children, you have to make the best decision on what you feel for your child. And a lot of times people don't know that difference of not putting themselves before anyone else. And when your child is going through sicknesses and all types of things, because, hey, they're kids. Their bodies is growing immunities. Their bodies are growing defenses. They don't have everything we have as 20, 30, 40-year-old people to battle whatever little itch and scratch and cough and whatever comes our way. If we knew that, shoot, we wouldn't get a common cold. If we had all the answers, we wouldn't be sick. But it's miraculous that if a baby gets sick, it's like, oh my God, you're a bad parent, you're a horrible person. That's not how it works. It's not fair that you as an adult can't prevent your adult ass from getting sick, but you're supposed to prevent a child from getting sick. If you knew the remedy, you would do it for your damn self. Think about it. Take a moment. I'll wait. And I don't say it to be an ass, but it's reality. Now, certain things, yes, you can prevent your child. Get your child the flu shot. You know, make sure you're bundling your kid up every day. Whatever. But I hate the fact that when it comes to certain situations, it's like grandparents, aunts, uncles, whoever, have such a strong opinion on what makes a child, you know, in danger or whatever. Like, my mom was really mad. Well, not mad, but she felt that way because I was really pushing to breastfeed my child. And I wanted to do it. It wasn't for anyone else but myself. So she was just like, well, I was going to do this. And I was going to have to probably beat your ass. Like, I was legit a strong-willed, you know, new parent. And I'm like, that's not what we're doing. I don't care what you feel about that. That's not your decision to make. And my mother was just kind of like, oh, okay. It wasn't me being a dick. It's the fact that I put my foot down as strong as you put yours down. So if you feel some type of way, feel some type of way. But don't feel some type of way about my child and my decisions. And it's a very strong-willed feeling when you can say my child, because, you know, your mom and dad be quick to be, that's my child. Or, you know, when you were younger, your mom be like, if your grandmother told you you could have kids, your mother said you didn't, well, that's my child. I'm in that same position. So when it comes to my child, sometimes, yes, I may hold on to things a little tighter because my child is something I fought every tooth and nail to get here. I went through surgery to have. I laid across that bed and had her by myself. I didn't have her with no one else pushing me. You know what I mean? It was me. Ain't nobody was there but me and my husband pushing his baby. So at the end of the day, any decision I make, he got a 50 on. So when it comes to kids getting sick, don't beat yourself up. Don't turn it into that, you know, victimized parent, which is a very big thing. People don't realize how hard it is as new parents to not feel like you're the worst parent ever if your child gets sick. Or if your child gets sick, you know, oh my God, did I do that wrong? Oh my God, you know, am I going to break them? What happened? But at the end of the day, you got to know, okay, what's the best decision? But again, it's a lesson we all learn. It's a lesson you learn in growth. It's a lesson you learn with just making your decisions. I personally remember feeling like, you know, I had all the answers in the beginning, and then I started stepping back because I felt like I was questioning, you know, decisions that I wasn't comfortable with. Because I was like, wait, why is everybody telling me to go left when I can go right? Why do I have to go left if I can go right? Because it then became, are you making your own decisions? Are you making decisions for your better good of your family? Are you making decisions for the better good of your child? Because that's something that people don't consider all the time. They're always listening to, you know, every other decision, but it's like your decision has to be a good one for the unified front. If I say we don't eat pork in the house, we ain't eating pork in the house. Now, why we don't eat pork, that could be debatable. But if I say we not going to do something because I see the better it can have, you know, have toward our family, then that's what I'm gonna do. But a lot of times people don't get it. And you end up having to battle, especially with parents, with just getting stuff to a certain position. So, at the end of the day, we'll make the decisions we're going to make. We're going to take a quick break. So, we're back. Okay, I just wanted to say that. But we're back. and we're discussing, you know, feeling the blues when your baby has them. One of the biggest things I've learned is it's okay that your kid gets sick. It's okay if your kid doesn't feel well. It's okay if your kid has a normal thing, like, hey, a common cold, a runny nose, a little something. Like, I feel like it's so interesting to me how much my mom or older people, like, overreact to something like, oh, your daughter has a cold. That means you didn't do what you were supposed to do. And I'm like, I remember I had a cold, and you a doctor. So explain to me why it's okay for me to be a child of a doctor and have a cold, but my child can't have a common cold, or my child can't have a runny nose. It's the middle of winter. Of course she's going to get sick. Of course things are going to happen. And I feel like as parents, we are so quick to feel guilt, to feel worried, to feel scared when something goes wrong. And then it's hard for us to cope with how people might treat us, like we did something to them. And I tell y'all this very upfrontly, like, that's not my style. And I'm not that way when it comes to treating people who have sick kids. I'm like, hey, if your baby's sick, I understand. Colds are common. That's why it's called the what? Common cold. Yes. If we had an issue with babies getting the flu, why are they giving out the flu shot? If nobody ever got chicken pox, why do we have fencamarine lotion? All I'm saying is people put it in perspective that for some reason, the things and the ailments and the reasons we don't feel good, or these common reasons we have, medication and healthcare, our kids are never supposed to get sick. Our children are never going to have a cold. And as a parent, you feel that guilt. Now, I am all about vaccinations. You are not going to get me to quote anything negative about vaccinations. But I definitely agree, you know, with not the guilt, not the pain, not the stress, not the worry, because I don't think it's fair for us to treat our newbie moms so harshly, or to treat moms in general. I remember my cousin had broke his arm playing. And the first thing, you know, his teacher's gonna say is, oh, did this happen at home? Did your parents know about this? And he was like, yeah, I was playing basketball and I ran into the pole and fell back. He was like, I wasn't paying attention. I was going up for a block, and when I landed, it came on. And for me, it was literally like, what do you mean? People act like it's the hardest thing ever. And I think it's hilarious that parents can just, you know, throw this coat of guilt on and... it's one of those things I don't want to take on. And I'm more of a parent of empathy. I'm a parent who is very understanding. And I've learned that even though I'm a new mom, and even though I don't know all the answers, I appreciate the advice of moms all the way around. And advice is a very hard thing to take. And I really feel like I don't always know what I need to hear, but sometimes it's like a dosage. And a dosage of something I need, a dosage of something I want, a dosage of truth that I probably could prepare better for. I take every piece of advice and take what I need from it. And I'm a very, you know, open book when it comes to advice. Especially with my daughter being so young and everyone's like, oh, you know, don't do this, don't do that. But you got to take what you need. And I say that with love, because especially when you're a young mom under 30, everyone has a book of advice and a mystery, you know, ailment book that they figured out how to fix everything, and they know the answer to a common cold and how not to get colic, and don't let your kid sleep with no socks on, and don't put your baby in the tub before midnight, like all these type of crazy things. And you naturally are like, okay, you know, maybe they're telling me to be preventive. No, sometimes people just tell you shit because they like to give out advice. Unsolicited advice at that. I've been very hush-hush when it comes to advice to strangers. If my friends ask me for advice, especially because most of my friends don't have kids. So I probably have, out of, let's just say, 20 friends, I have probably 5 or 6 of them have kids. And when I say friends, I mean close friends. People who I've actually allowed in my home and I've gone in their home. I consider those friends. And out of the 6 out of the 20, most of their kids are older than mine, but then I have like 3 who are about the same age, if not younger, and we share advice. Like, one of my good girlfriends, who she was my college roommate, and I always call her roommate because we were roommates. She had gotten pregnant and married right before I got engaged and pregnant, and we laugh because we're like, look at us now, we're moms. And it was so funny because we always like to share as much as possible when it came to our journey, because she had her daughter, I want to say May or June, and then I had my daughter in August, so she was about almost 3 months ahead of me. And it was so crazy because I was going through my breastfeeding journey and she had given up because her whole pregnancy was great to the end. And it was kind of hard for her to understand, you know, some of the aspects where I had a lot of help. And in her hospital, they didn't give her as much help. They didn't give as much advice. They didn't give hardly anything when it came to breastfeeding with her and her pain. And her, you know, she told me her epidural wore off. Like, I had a glorious pregnancy with an even easier labor and delivery. Like, my epidural kicked in. I had my baby in 6 pushes. I went to the hospital in time. Like, I knew I was having her. I was a week late, though. Almost a week. I was, like, 5 days late. And it was so crazy because I remember I literally was having contractions the day before. And I literally worked up until the day before I gave birth. And I tell people that very proudly because everybody's like, oh, I was on bed rest. And I was like, no, I went to work Wednesday and had her Thursday. And I was like, you know, I literally was kind of like so scared to say I think I'm having her, because I was like, I don't want to wake him up too late. I don't want to wake him up too early. And he slept like a baby. Like, I went home after I was, you know, in all my pain at work, because I was like, you know, here's my emergency contact. And I gave my coworkers and my boss my husband's number. And I was like, you know, how can I say? I was like, if anything happens, which sounds really bad because I always say I don't like saying it like that. Like, if anything happens. But I'm like, if I need to go, you need to call, you know, my husband hears his cell phones. Tell him to meet me at Mercy. So I went home on Wednesday, and I was having contractions, but they were so far. They were like every 30, 40 minutes. So I went home, I cooked dinner, and at the time I had all the kids in the house because it was the middle of summer, so all the school was out, all the babies was home, we had a house full of kids. And for most who don't know, I have 4 stepchildren other than my daughter, and I have 3 that are young enough that still are around often. My oldest is in New York, and I laugh because we had a house full of kids and everybody's hanging out, and I cooked dinner and we're chilling, and my husband's like, are you okay? I'm like, yeah, I'm just, you know, I got cramps, I'm hurting, but I'm all right. My feet were swollen, and we ate dinner, and I was like, babe, I gotta go lay down. Like, I have to go. He's like, all right, babe, we'll just go lay down. So I go lay down. Of course, I never went to sleep. Now, mind you, I went to work all Wednesday. I was up till 6 a.m. on Thursday counting my contractions till they got close enough. So by like 6:30, no, it was like 6 o'clock. It wasn't even 6:30. It was like 6 o'clock. I tapped my husband. I said, we got to go to the hospital. We got to go. And he just was like, what? I was like, can we go to the hospital? I think I'm having her. And he's like, So he rolls over and grunts and gets his stuff. And I grab my bag, the diaper bag, and I'm perked up and ready to go. I knew what I was wearing to the hospital. I put on some sweatpants and this hoodie. Well, I put on sweatpants and a t-shirt. And I was ready to go. Ready to go. Because I knew we were going. And I put on my stretchy sweatpants. I had already packed my hospital bag like 3 weeks away. You know, I knew what I needed. So I'm hopped in the car. Now the babies and the kids are all still asleep. But the oldest is there and she's 13. So we were like, no, she was 12 at the time. And he was like, I'll be back. Keep an eye on your sister because his sister is 7 and her brother's 11. So they weren't babies before you start calling Dyfus. He was like, I'll be back. Just keep an eye on your sister and your brother. Don't do anything. Go back to sleep. She was like, all right, cool. So they hear us leaving. We get in the car. He stops for freaking coffee at 7-Eleven. And I'm in the car having full-blown contractions now. Full-blown. So we get to the hospital. He drops me off in the emergency. They're like, what's going on? So I'm having my baby. They were like, oh, you need a wheelchair. I was like, cool. Having a baby. And so in the midst of it, it was so funny because I'm like wide awake but like tired and exhausted because now I'm running off of like almost 27 hours of no sleep and I need to move and shape. So we do all that. By the time we get to where they first check you out to see if they're going to keep you, if you don't know, they don't just put you in a room and say we're keeping you. They literally say, let's check how dilated you are. We'll put you in this room for observation. So we put me in the room for observation. And she's like, so here's the thing. You're dilated, but you're not that dilated. And I was like, okay. And she's like, yeah, if you get 3 more centimeters, we'll keep you. So, of course, I'm like, y'all gonna keep me regardless. She's like, no. Like, we can't keep you unless you're at least 3 centimeters dilated. I'm like, all right, we gonna get there. So, of course, I'm sitting there in pain asking about epidural because that's all I heard. You need to get me an epidural. And before I can get too far in this story, I'm going to tell you this. Let's just take a moment and thank you for the epidural. We're going to take a quick break. I'm going to finish the story. I'm going to be right back. So we're back. And where did I leave off? Okay. So we get to the hospital, they tell me I have to wait, and I'm waiting. I'm impatiently waiting, because my first question is, how do I get an epidural? What's the steps to getting an epidural? Am I next to get an epidural? Like, what we doing? So, of course, the lady's like, you need to calm down. We have to make sure we're going to keep you, and, you know, we're just trying to make sure. And I'm like, cool, epidural, got it. So we wait there. It's now 10 o'clock. And it's so surreal to think back on an entire experience. And think about all the good and the bad. And all the in-between. Because I remember at 10 o'clock she came back and she said, because I'm going to be back at 10. I said, cool. 10 o'clock came. Shorty was like clockwork. She walked in. She said, all right, we're going to check you. Now, mind you, my husband done went to sleep, dozed off, had his coffee, all that. She's like, all right, so we're going to keep you. I was like, thank you, Jesus. He was like, all right, you were right. I said, I told you. That's why I got my bag. So they're like, so we're going to get you a room together. It's going to be a little bit of time. He's like, all right, babe, well, I'm going to go check on the kids. Because now it's getting later. And he's like, I'm going to go check on the babies. I'll be back. I'm going to tell Tasha, who's his best friend. And I'm going to tell Tasha, you're here. So she knows. So somebody can come be up here. So in the same time, I'm calling my mother. And this was not meant to be my birthing story, but it became that. It's crazy. So I call my mom and I'm like, Ma. She's like, what was wrong? I was like, I'm at the hospital. I'm having the baby. She's like, okay, all right. Text me the address. Text me the hospital. I'm on my way. Now, if you know anything about or has listened to my, you know, podcast for any amount of time, you know my mother lives how far? An hour and a half away. So I called her before I got to my room, which was between 10 and 10:15. Pinpoint that. 10 to 10:15. So in the same time span, I'm like, all right, bet. I'm, you know, trying to get comfortable. Couldn't sleep. Kept having to go to the bathroom. They tell me, be careful going to the bathroom. You don't want to push her out. Don't try to poop. I'm like, cool. I'm exhausted because now I'm up for more than 24 hours. My body is slowly breaking down. And I'm trying to figure out how I'm supposed to have this baby. So probably before noon, yeah, it was closer to like 11, 11:30. They finally get me a room. By that time, his best friend shows up and she's like, well, she calls. She says she's on her way. It was about 10:15, 10:30 when she called. So she called and said, I don't want anything. I said, no, I'm good. She's like, can you have anything? I said, no. They're giving me ice chips. I'm chilling. She was like, all right. I'm on my way. Now, because of what side of town I was on, this is how fast she got there. She got there before I actually got really settled in my room. She was there before noon. My mom is still not there. Now, she loves to tell this story because she missed her Ravens game because she has these tickets. So, I will never forget this day because the Ravens played on this Thursday night. And she was supposed to go see the Ravens play. Eat it, baby. And she came and watched me have this baby. So we laugh and think about it and talk about it now, but I just know how funny it was that she actually, you know, she got there so fast and she had brought food because she was like, oh, you know, is my best friend there? I said, no, he went to go check on the kids. He'll be back soon. She was like, all right, I'm on my way. So she gets there, whatever. I'm in the room and they're like, you got to do this drip. Now, it's closer to 12-ish. I'll say that, closer to 12, probably 11:30, 11:45. I wasn't out for too long, but she comes in and she goes, you got to do this drip. I'm like, bet. She's like, yeah, but once you do this drip, you can get your epidural. I was like, oh, now you've piqued my interest. Now I'm interested. How long is this drip? She's like, about 30, 40 minutes. I was like, Lord, they're going to kill me. They are trying to kill me. You hear me? They are trying to kill me. So I do this drip, and I'm watching this drip like it is Lifetime movie channel. My eyes are heavy, but my body keeps contracting. I keep trying to hold it, embrace myself. They like, don't ball yourself up too tight. And I'm like, I'm hurting. They done put, you know, the catheter in, and I didn't even feel that. No, they didn't put it in yet. I'm lying. But I couldn't go to the bathroom because they were afraid. So, no, they did put my catheter in. They did put it in, but I didn't feel it. I forgot why. It might have been, okay, I might be mixing it up. That's fine. But nonetheless, within like 45 minutes, they came and was like, you get your epidural. By then, my husband's back. He's like, you okay? And I'm like, yeah. They're like, okay. So right before he goes to the bathroom, comes back, and he realizes, oh, they did your epidural. I said, yeah. And they were like, she's going to get drowsy. She's going to get sleepy. So I'm like, okay. Because I have not, again, been to sleep in over 24 hours. So literally, I'm looking for sleep. Looking for it. You hear me? So literally, the epidural kicks in amazingly. And I will say this. I heard a lot of horror stories about epidurals, and mine was not a horror story. We legit... They ask you, they tell you how to position yourself, tell you not to move, and they ask you, do you feel it on both sides? You're supposed to feel it on both sides. It's supposed to numb your waist down. You're not supposed to feel much more than a pinch, and it doesn't leave more than like a mosquito, you know, a mosquito bite kind of scab. So I was pretty satisfied with mine. I'm not going to say it was perfect, but I didn't have that major issue. Like, you know, the rest of most people I've heard, and I've heard people who did it without it. I don't know. You built like that. I'm not. I'll say that. But in the meantime and in between time, I got the epidural, got it moving. So then I'm like, now I'm in on a regular drip. I'm feeling good. They're checking me, and I finally go to sleep. Now, what I did know and what I learned probably within the last year or so, my husband recorded me sleeping, talking to our baby. Beautiful moment. Super, super beautiful. Maybe I'll get a copy of it so you can hear it. But it was literally this cherished moment of me dozed out, laid up in this hospital bed, and her in my belly, and him talking to her, talking about how excited he is and how tired I am, it was such a moment. But nonetheless, now time is flying. Again, I called my mother at what time, folks? We told you to pinpoint about 10:15. It is now going on 1 o'clock. Still no mom. Still no mom. I've texted my close friends and loved ones, told them I'm in the hospital, let them know, you know, things are moving. Baby will be here soon. Cool. Still can't eat. I'm halfway awake, but now I'm under like 10 blankets, because now what you don't realize is with epidurals is you shake like a absolute crackhead. Like when I say shake, like you're freezing in a way that you don't feel cold, but your body is cold. It drops your temperature completely. And I myself already, you know, anemic. I was super, super chill, super cold, super freezing. My husband was worried because he's like, she's shaking. They wanted to put me on oxygen because they felt like I was having a moment, and I have, you know, a history of anxiety attacks. So now I'm freaking out. And it was so crazy because I think back now and I'm like, oh my God, that was such a moment. These were such crazy times. But I laugh because I'm like, I don't know how the hell I did that. So we moving and grooving, and my epidural starts to wear off. And I was like, oh, I think I peed on myself. They're like, you can't pee. You have a catheter. I'm like, I peed on myself. So they look, my water breaks. So they're like, okay, you know, how you feeling? I'm like, I'm feeling good. I'm feeling all right. And they go, okay. I said, but can I get another epidural? I feel like it's wearing off. And they give me the option. I said, okay, cool. Now, once they give it to me, the funnier part of it is probably within the first 5 or 6 minutes, I feel it. But then I'm like, I feel like I really have to go to the bathroom. So the nurse is like, don't go to the bathroom. I'm like, no. Like, I need to poop. Like, this is the number two situation. I cannot hold this. This is breaking out of me. She's like, no, don't do it. It's the baby. And I'm like, okay. So they come and check. Now my husband's perked up. His best friend's perked up. Everybody's perked up because they're like, what's about to go down? So they check me. And of course, I am fully 10 centimeters dilated 5 minutes after giving me an epidural. Because if you don't know, epidural does two things. Numb the pain, but speed up the process. So, we're now sitting there fully blown. No mom. It is now going on 2 o'clock. Next thing you know, they tell me my doctor's not in yet. My backup doctor's not in yet. So the doctor on duty is coming. So the doctor on duty is this old black man. And he, I never will forget him, was so sweet, but very soft-spoken. Was like, are you ready to do this? I said, I guess. And he was like, well, you can't guess now. It's time to go. They sprung my legs open, told my husband to get on one side, told the nurse to get on the other side, told the doctors which end to go to. And 6 pushes later at 2:20, I had a bustling baby girl. 2:35, my mother comes busting in the door with all her things. Talk about, did I miss it? Of course you missed it. Absolutely you missed it. Why? Because I called you hours ago. And you weren't here. We're going to take a quick break. I promise you this is the last one. And I'll be back. So we're back. So where did we leave off? Oh, I'll tell you where we left off. I remember exactly where we left off. My mom showed up after the baby was born. Now, mind you, if you've been listening since the beginning, what time did my mother get called? I'll tell you what time she got called. 10:15. I didn't have my child till what? 2? So close to like 4 hours later, my mother shows up. Because I think I might have called her sooner than 10. I think I might have texted her and told her I was at the hospital. But nonetheless, my mother was the last person to show up. And of course, I'll tell you this, my mom's an OBG. So she's like, oh, it's going to take so much time. You're going to be there all day. You're not going to probably have her until tomorrow. And my sister-in-law, who was born on the 10th, was like, oh, she'll be my birthday twin. You're not going to probably have it until tomorrow. I said, okay. I'm already almost a week late. I'm like 5 days late. I already went and got my scrape. And if you don't know what a scrape is, basically, if you go past your due date, and this is something I definitely would put in the tips to things to know, and we'll probably do that our next episode, tips to know with labor, with delivery, with hospital, all those things. is if you go past your due date, one of two things can happen. They give you options. I'll say that. You can do the waited out game. And waited out means you can go up to 41, 42 weeks now with no issue before they decide you get a C-section. But again, it depends on your pregnancy, what your doctor feel works for you, how old you are, because certain ages push you into a high-risk pregnancy, how much you weigh, how much weight you gain, high-risk pregnancy. And also, you know, the position and the care of the baby in the womb. Now, I'll say this. When it came down to it, I was sitting there thinking like, oh, my God, I'm about to have this baby. Really. What's more baffling, it didn't really click to me until probably a month or so before I gave birth. I was sitting there thinking like, oh, my God, I really have to push this baby out of me. I don't know what's going to happen. But I knew I wasn't going to have her on my due date. I just knew it. I was way too comfortable. She was way too comfortable. We was in a very cush. She was living in cush company, you know? And I knew when I didn't have any real, like, any issues that she wasn't in a rush to get out. A lot of people have, like, water break, cramps. They get contractions. I didn't have anything, like nothing. People didn't even know I was do that. Like when I say I worked every day, I worked 5 days a week for 8 to 10 hours, depending on what I needed. I worked a festival pregnant. I did a lot of stuff. Only thing I didn't do was go see Beyonce, and that was because her concert was July, like middle to the end of July. And I was so scared to go to this concert pregnant like that, because I was like, if I go to this concert and I have this baby at Beyonce concert, she might come and bless my child. If you don't know, I'm a part of the Beehive. I love Beyonce. But I was scared because the concert was in Philly. And I was going to go with one of my good girlfriends. And she was like, we can go. I'll drive. Because she had an extra ticket. And she was like, if you want to go, let me know. And I was double backing on it. Like, maybe. And I was talking to my sister-in-laws about it, and they were like, yeah, don't go. They were like, if something happens, you're too far from home, you're with one person. Now, granted, crazy part, my homegirl is going to school to be a brain surgeon, so she knows medical, you know, things. But I put myself in a position to say, you know, let me not do that. It's too exciting. It's too many people. I might not make it. My feet were swelling at this point. But yeah, my mom showed up at like 2:35. The baby was already here. I was like an afterglow, as they call it. And it was so crazy because, you know, you're not allowed to eat when you're, you know, about to give birth. As soon as you're in the hospital, they say water and chips, like water chips, ice chips, water, whatever. And I had eaten the night before. I had a cheesesteak. That was my one pregnancy craving. I will tell you that. And it was so funny because when I look back on it, I laugh a little bit because I go, oh, my God, I can't believe, you know, I did this. I can't believe I had her. Can't believe, you know, how quick of a process it felt like. But in the same breath, I was like, damn, that was such a moment, because I definitely didn't even think that far ahead. To the factor of, you know, giving birth and the fact of me actually, you know, pushing her out, it was like a real experience. And what's more interesting is when my mom got there, I was like exhausted. And it's so crazy because I'll say this, the epidural, even though a lot of people have issues, I didn't have any issues. So I had a very different experience compared to most. And I definitely put myself in a very high bracket of good labor and deliveries compared to most. So what ended up happening was like godsend. And the first thing I wanted to do was eat. And my mom had brought food because she thought, okay, you know, I'm gonna eat while we wait for this baby. And the first thing I did was say, Ma, can I have some of your food? And she goes, they didn't feed you? I said, Ma, you know, I've been like pushing and waiting and in delivery this whole time. And she was like, oh, okay. And my mother came prepared, I'll tell you this. She had sandwiches and snacks and goodies and all types of things. And I was so grateful because when it came down to it, I definitely was super excited, but I was more happy to eat than anything. Because if you don't know, hunger and a pregnant woman do not match. You end up really, 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 like, not sick, but you definitely feel it when you're pregnant about hunger, because you go hours without eating, and hours where they basically put you in a position to not even think about it, but you're like, oh, you know, how is this going to play out? How am I going to feel? And I laugh a little bit because I think back on all of the time that day that I actually, you know, did it, not really by myself, but I definitely was like, all right, Shani, you got to pep yourself there. All right, girl, you gotta stay positive. All right, you got to do whatever. Like, I felt so inclined to motivate myself because I felt like, you know, he was out. He wasn't, you know, with me the whole entire time. You know, his best friend, I'm so grateful because she was there. And, you know, when you have people in your corner, I always say, make sure you have people who are going to show up. And what I laugh about now is, you know, thinking how fast that day went. Because I'm like, dad, you know, I wasn't even thinking. I wasn't even, you know, prepared as much as I thought. Because again, I went to work the day before. And when you get the scraping, basically what they're doing is starting your pregnancy. So they basically take off that membrane that covers the outside of where your cervix is, which is what technically gets labor started. And what's more interesting is the fact that a lot of times we don't even think of all the factors that may play into all the pieces of having a baby. Like, we think, oh, you know, we're going to get pregnant, it's going to be beautiful, take your pictures, you know, blah, 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 blah. And then next thing you know, it's like, okay, those 9 months go super duper fast. And when I say go fast, it's like, I remember the first 4 months, you don't even, not even remember, but you don't even think fully on the pregnancy because you literally are like, oh, in the whimsicalness of being pregnant and in the whimsicalness of, you know, the moment of just, I don't know, you get into this moment of glow, let's just say. And then what ends up happening is by the time you finish, you know, it's like, it's so crazy. It's such an experience to kind of go through. And it's something that I definitely don't take for granted, but I definitely was like, you know, I had a very different experience, especially compared to like one of my friends, well, two of my friends who had their baby the same year as me. The one I always tell you about, my roommate from college, like, her epidural didn't kick in until it was too late. And then the other one, you know, she had a 9-pound baby and ended up having to have a C-section. So both of them had totally, totally different experiences. And both of them had totally different, you know, advice on giving out, you know, giving birth. Whereas when people ask me about it, like, oh, how was labor? How was this? How was that? And I was like, fine. Like, I had a very totally, absolutely different experience than most. And I'm very grateful. Because let me tell you, by the time I pushed her out, I did the bathroom thing where they were like, oh, you know, you'll probably use the bathroom when you have a baby. And I was like, what does that mean? And I was so confused because I was like, I don't know what that means. And they're like, no, like, you'll be pushing, but you won't realize you're pushing everything. And I definitely pushed everything out of me, cheesesteak and all. And it was so funny because they laid her on my chest and they're like, oh, you know, hold her, you know, take the moment. I tell my husband all the time, I was like, I don't even remember you cutting the umbilical cord. And he was like, what? I was like, I don't remember that. I said, I don't remember. It's like you get, like, PTSD, they call it, you know, after you have, you know, because technically giving birth is a traumatic experience because they say it's comparable to breaking, like, 5 bones or something like that. I don't remember much of, like, the major portions of that day. Like, I remember going to the hospital. I remember laying on the bed. I remember them putting me into the other bed. I remember them hooking me up. I remember getting the epidural. I remember dozing in and out of sleep because I'm very, you know, I'm a deep sleeper nonetheless, but it was like I was so grateful to be able to fall asleep because they say, you know, contractions are like cramps times 10. Take it as that. Like, no BS, no lies, no nothing. Like, it's one of those experiences where you are like, it's the weirdest pain you could ever feel because it's a very deep, non-hollow feeling. So it's kind of similar to cramps in a sense where it's in that area, but it's so much deeper and it makes your body like ball up. And some people have really bad ones. I'll say mine were mild compared to what I've seen. Because I'm just going based off of people's pain tolerance. And they say, you know, your pain tolerance definitely, you know, plays a major part in how you handle labor. Because I was like, I had a moment, you know, where things are really bad. I was like, but I was able to, like, get through, move forward, do what I have to do. That it was, like, it wasn't the worst thing I've ever experienced, but it was definitely top two. But I also remember feeling like I was so hungry. I was so tired. I was drained. People were, like, calling and texting me. And I say this, give people credit where it's due. If I tell you I'm on my way to the hospital or I'm about to have this baby, don't call me. Don't text me. Don't blow up the person's phone. Because I felt like people who knew, I had a group message with all my little friends, like my girlfriends, who I was very close to and still very close to, that I literally was like, hey, so I'm on my way to the hospital. Most likely she's coming today. I will let you know when and if I want visitors. And I was very blunt about it because a lot of times as soon as people find out you're having a baby, they're like, oh, I gotta go. And recently, one of my friends from work, and I can consider her a friend, her best friend was pregnant. And, you know, she told her, you know, her best friend and her best friend's mom, who she doesn't have a great relationship with, but nonetheless, like, you know, let me know when she goes to labor. I already told them, if she's going, I'm leaving work, I'm going to go. That's my best friend. I want to be there. And I'll say this. People always want to be there for your labor, for your moment, for your, you know, your thing. And it sucked because my best friend lived in another state, so she was not there. But it was like my friends understood. And I told them, like, when I'm ready to have guests, I will have guests. I will let y'all know. Because a lot of times, as soon as people find out you're having a baby, they're on the next thing smoking. And I really didn't want visitors. I really wanted to enjoy this moment. I really was very adamant about just kind of no one except my mom and him. And I said that because, like, one of my friends, you know, was like, oh, I'm coming. I'm going to come. I was like, come where? She was like, oh, I was going to come and make sure I was there and, you know, I'll be in the room if you, I don't need any of that. No, 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 no. And don't get me wrong, it's a great gesture. But if that ain't your place for them, don't let it be the place for them. If that ain't your thing, don't have a bunch of people talk you into having them in your space, in your bubble, in your place, if that's not what you want. Do not feel guilted if you don't want people in your bubble. I feel like I was very content because his best friend was there, and me and her have a very great relationship. You know, she's like an aunt to my daughter, and she, you know, keeps her, loves her, buys her things, takes her out, keeps her. Like, she's a great aunt figure to her. So I had no issue when it came to her wanting to be there. She was in there the whole time. None of that was a problem. But if you are a person who just wants to have you and your baby father, your husband, your boyfriend, whoever, just have that. If you don't want to have a bunch of people waiting on you, it's okay. You don't have to have that. If you do not want a bunch of people literally just there for the first 3 days, first month, first week, whatever, it's okay to not have that. I feel like it's so funny to me that people want to barge in on your personal time. Especially for me, I was a first time new mom, and I was more anxious than anything, but I really just wanted it to be me and him. I just wanted it to be us. And he held my hand, he held my leg, he saw all the goods that came out of me. And as soon as she laid on my chest, she let out a cheesesteak too, which was so funny because I was like, oh, she pooped. And they were like, oh, we'll get you cleaned up. It's okay. Because you feel so weak. You feel almost half of yourself. And by the time, you know, I ate and I was able to, like, crack a joke, talk to people, text people, FaceTime people, whatever, I was so exhausted. They were like, okay, so we're going to move you to your room so you can get some rest. And I was like, okay. Here's the biggest lie they tell you. You're going to get some sleep. And the reason I say it's the biggest lie they tell you, because you don't get much sleep in the hospital. By the time I got up there, dinner was already being served. So I was pissed because I couldn't pick what I wanted for dinner. And they give you the generic. Now, I will say this. My hospital had really good food. But the dinner that they give you as like a generic option, because I'm not a finicky person, but I also don't like everything. It's not about eating everything. I don't like everything. I was so mad because the dinner was like broccoli, rice, and like a baked chicken thigh, boneless, skinless chicken thigh. And I was just like, this is not what I want. Which was funny because I was just like over it. But I laughed because like, I think that first night, I have two good friends I call my sisters. They came, and it was so crazy because once I think they came around like 8 or 9 o'clock, and they were like, "Do you need anything? Do you want anything?" I was like, "Can you bring me some food, like some soup or something?" Like, I was so hungry that the food was so trash. I was so upset. And he went home to check on the kids again, and he was like, "I'll be back later, just to make sure they're good, and then I'm gonna do back and forth." I said, "Okay, that's fine." So like, my sisters brought me broccoli cheddar soup and like a sandwich, and when I say I fucked it up, I smashed so hard. But I laughed because I was like, that was the one thing I was so like passionate about, because all I wanted to do was eat like a real meal, have something decent on my stomach. And then they were like, oh, you can order your breakfast and stuff for tomorrow. I was like, oh, bet. Let me get waffles. Can I get sausage and pancakes and eggs? And when I say I was like in coffee, it was so good. I was like, oh, I can't wait till breakfast now. And then the first thing they ask you, do you want your baby in the room? I, being a new mom, was so adamant, yes, I want my child in the room. One, because I was just like so excited she was here. I was so content. But my daughter's a really good sleeper and a really good baby nonetheless. So it was like, I just wanted to have moments where it was just me and her. And it might sound weird, but think about it like this. If you have other children, or if you have other people that are going to be visiting or have time, you won't have much time of just you and your daughter that first few months. Even if you're on maternity leave for the full 6 weeks, you're going to be, you know, trying to get your house in order, trying to get back to normality, trying to get adjusted to this new baby. And I, again, had a house full of kids, and I had, you know, him, and he was working. So I was like, yeah, I'd rather her just kind of hang out with me. It's okay, we'll be fine. And they were like, you sure? And I was like, yeah, we're good. So by the time like we got adjusted and acclimated, I was comfortable, I'll say that. And then it was like, you know, I kept it very minimal on the visitors in the beginning. I was very adamant about keeping it very minimal in the beginning, because I feel like people don't tell you it's okay to not have visitors. And I think that's such a weird thing, because it's like, I know people who didn't even tell a lot of folks that they went into labor. They just, you know, if you didn't hear from them, you kind of figured. And one of my friends was like that. She had her daughter in April, and she had that 9-pound baby. And we were very close, and we became good girlfriends over time because we had known each other from work. And I hadn't seen anything on Instagram or Facebook from her, hadn't heard from her. And I texted her, she was like, girl, I'm in the hospital, I had this baby. And I said, what? And I wasn't mad. Do not take that as me being mad. I was like, oh my God, really? How are you? How you feeling? How was it? Because she had had a big gap between her youngest child and her oldest child. And what was so crazy was like how different her pregnancy was, that she was not prepared for. And she was like, you know, I didn't realize how I was gonna feel. I didn't realize the big change it was gonna be. She was like, so literally I'm adjusting. And I was like, oh my gosh, like, yeah, you had, I think her youngest son was like 12 or 10 at the time, between 10 and 12. So she had a very large gap between her youngest now newborn baby and, you know, her youngest son who's almost a teenager. So she was going through something different. She had a very hard pregnancy. She put on a lot of weight. She was on bed rest, and she had put on significantly, probably close to 40 to 50 pounds. And she was so concerned about, like, you know, having to have this baby that had now topped off at 9 pounds, like 10 ounces or something. And she had to have a C-section, and her healing process was totally different. So it was very unique when we're not even comparing stories, but we're just discussing, you know, our situations. It was a very unique thing where it's like, you don't know. You really, really don't know. And, you know, when you're going through all of these, not even stigmas, but you go through all of these ups and downs with pregnancy, it's a very learning experience. Like, when people talk about how difficult pregnancy is, that's the understatement of the year. Because most of the time, people who are talking to you about it may or may not have had a child in the recent years. It's always people who have, like, teenage to grown kids who want to talk about pregnancy and labor and life. And I was like, you know, I appreciate it, but I'm good. Like, I wasn't trying to take too much unsolicited advice. I specifically, you know, really put myself in a position to kind of yield myself from what was going on with everyone else. Most people didn't even know I was pregnant. And it was a blessing because I didn't show. But I'm also a very private person. So the people who knew, knew. And the people who didn't, didn't. And the people who knew, knew not to run around and tell people, oh, you know, Shawnee's, you know, pregnant. I was very scared. I was very, you know, nervous. And I feel like at the end, it's such a great and grand reward. But you're exhausted. You're tired physically, mentally, emotionally. Your body is going through things you did not plan. And when you look back and you think of all that time you're pregnant, you're like, dang, that was such a short-lived kind of victory, or a very fast-paced time where you feel like, hey, I look up now, I'm not pregnant no more. It's so funny because you naturally are like, oh my God, that was such a thing. And it almost feels like it never happened. Which you can laugh and talk about it later, but I'm telling you, you almost feel like it's a phase that you went through, like a dream in a sense. It's so weird. But yeah, for the most part, my pregnancy, my labor were joy, to say the least. Would I do it again? Possibly. My husband had a vasectomy, so the answer is probably closer to no. But vasectomy is irreversible. But I will say this. Enjoy your moment. Enjoy your time span. Enjoy your, you know, every aspect of labor, delivery, pregnancy, and be adamant. Speak up. Talk to your doctors. Talk to your nurses. Talk to how you're feeling. And make sure if you do have someone with you that they can advocate for you. One of the gentlemen I follow on Instagram, his wife died because they weren't listening to her. They didn't listen to her tell you how much pain she was in, how she was feeling, how she was sick. And even Serena Williams said that. She was super duper sick and people didn't believe her. And then, you know, it was almost, she almost died giving birth to her child. We are living in a time and age where cars are floating and they have, you know, hover bikes. But people are dying. Where we have common medicine and common sense where someone should be jumping in and helping. One of the girls I went to school with, she had her daughter right after me, and she had got so big, and she had so many complications, and she literally got so sick, she literally had to have a blood transfusion, and she was in the hospital for 2 weeks, and, you know, it was a very troubling time for her, but if she and her husband had not advocated and had a midwife, who knows where she would have even been, because she was like, I literally felt like I was in that hospital by myself fighting for my life. And you need to be prepared. So I appreciate you for listening. I know this episode was super duper long, longer than any episode I've ever done. I know. But we had such a good time. And I'll holler at y'all later.